Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today on Sticks In, we are back after a little bit of a week off. Took a little time there. I needed a little DNP, personal reasons, I guess, whatever they would call that in the NBA, for the last week, dealing with a few things here at home, but we have resolved all that. Rough news, we're in a good spot. I am happy to be back with you talking a little lacrosse. With that little bit out of the way, you may have noticed the top there might have sounded a little bit different. Very excited to be part of the Believe podcast studio. They host podcasts for some of the biggest athletes and sports media names in the world. I'm very excited to be the first, and I believe only, lacrosse podcast that you'll find on Believe. But very, very happy to be part of that and excited for what that brings for the future of the Sticks In podcast, for what it means. Hopefully people are starting to maybe take notice that the sport is growing, and I'm excited to be part of that. So today on Sticks In, we're going to talk through the Tuesday Top 20, as it is the usual custom. We'll go through the entire new media poll. We'll do that by looking first at my ballot as I vote in it, and then we'll see kind of where the teams I voted for actually shook out in the ballot. We will talk through the NLL a little bit, the playoff picture there. We'll talk through some of the college results that have happened. There's kind of just a lot that's been going on these last 2 weeks, and I haven't been with you, so let's just get right into it. Let's get to it. Let's get right into it. There's a lot to talk through. I think I want to start with the NLL, with the Indoor Pro League, because their regular season is winding down. The March to May is in full effect. There are just two regular season weekends remaining. Let's just kind of review, I guess, the standings, where things are. Currently, the Toronto Rock occupy the top spot. They have 13 wins. There's two games left. They'd have to lose out probably to not get the one seed. Their remaining games are Rochester and Saskatchewan. To even entertain the possibility, they'd have to lose at least one of those games. They've had a home playoff game locked up for quite a while at this point. They beat Albany last weekend. Their three losses this year are by a combined 5 goals. They are far and away the best team in the league. Well, far and away, maybe you want to take issue with, but they are the best team in the league. The defense remains outstanding. Jalen Rogers is now back from injury for them. Could not be a better timed return. Nick Rose is looking like not just a goalie of the year candidate or even favorite, but he looks like he could be an MVP candidate. So the Toronto Rock have the top spot. It would take a little special something happening for them to not be the one seed. It's possible, but their floor is basically the two seed. Currently in the two spot is San Diego. Like I said, they have to win out. They have Saskatchewan and Vancouver left. So if they win out and Toronto loses out, San Diego can get the one seed. Unlikely, not impossible, though. The Seals have won 4 straight. They beat Panther City by 4 goals last weekend. They visit Saskatchewan this weekend, but that regular season finale for them against Vancouver is going to be at home. So, you know, to me right now, the 1-2 teams in the league are Toronto and San Diego. I think they've opened up a bit of a gap between those two and the rest of the league. It feels like a finals collision course there. So right now, Toronto's the 1, San Diego the 2. As of today, Albany is in the 3 spot. Firewolves are kind of in a weird place, though. They have a playoff spot locked up. They're at 10 wins. They're in. They cannot miss the playoffs. But they have, I think, now lost 4 straight. I think at one point they were 10-2. I think they're sitting at 10-6. I mean, the last 2 games for the year for them are on the road. They're both going to be against teams that are fighting for their playoff lives, who are going to be scrapping down to that last whistle. It's a really tough spot for Albany right now. They've been a great story this year, but you don't want to have a playoff spot locked up and then enter the playoffs on a losing streak. It's just bad juju. You just don't want that to happen. You want to see them pick things up, turn things around so they can, you know, have some positive momentum into the playoffs. I don't think they have locked up a home game. So if they were to continue to losing and lose out, they might even play that first round playoff game on the road. And then it would be just oof, what a tough ending for the Firewolves after how good they've been all year. So they have the playoff spot locked up, but four straight losses is ugly. They need to figure things out. In the four spot right now, and joining the we have locked up a playoff spot ranks this weekend, the Georgia Swarm. Their win against Vegas this past weekend punched their ticket to the postseason. They're in a good spot. They've won four of their last five. They only have one game left. It's at home. Their last five games of the regular season, all at home. So if they manage to get a win in their finale, and then if the way things shake out, they wind up as a top four team, they get themselves a home game, they will not have played a road game since March 1st. And that just staying in that home arena, there's value to that. There's definitely value to that. So Georgia is in the four spot. They have also locked up a playoff spot. That is the end of the teams who have locked one up. There is only one team that has been mathematically eliminated at this point, and that's Vegas. Vegas is a 4-12. Winning out gets them to six wins. They ain't making it. They cannot make it. They will not catch the field. They will not make the playoffs. At this point, they can really only be a spoiler. But kind of interest there, and a reason to keep watching these games, even if you're a fan of these teams at the bottom, they have a remaining game against Colorado. So stick with me for a second here. Philly owns the number one pick that comes from Colorado this year. It came to them via New York in the Taggart-Clark trade. So New York acquired it way back when in the Tyson Gibson deal, and then they shipped that pick to Philadelphia to get Taggart-Clark. So Philly owns Colorado's first-round pick. Vegas winning improves that draft position if you're a Wings fan. On top of that, the Wings have just five wins. Not mathematically out of it, but come on. They would need a lot of help and to win out. They also have a game left with Colorado, which if you're playing for draft position, they really want to win that game. You want to beat Colorado. By beating Colorado, they improve their draft stock. There's kind of this little love triangle at the bottom of the standings to rattle the top of the draft order. And it's pretty fascinating. And it's a reason to watch those three teams right now to see how they shake out and how that pick gets maneuvered. Because if it ends up with Philly, you know, with Colorado finishing last, given the first overall pick to Philly, and then Philly's second to last or something, and Philly winds up with, you know, two picks in the top three, something like that, something crazy. As long as there's other deals I'm not accounting for here, I could be making a mistake, but Philly could be doing some draft damage the way the bottom of these standings go. The rest of the pack right now in between that group at the top, that four at the top and the three at the bottom is playing for four spots. Buffalo and Halifax are in the best position. They both have nine wins. Buffalo, I think, has the better opportunity for positioning. They have two games left. One of those is against Calgary. The other one is against that bottom of the standings team, Vegas. The Calgary game for them is at home in Bandit Land, which is always helpful. Buffalo has won four of their last five. They've been way better since the deadline, adding Dawson, signing Connor Farrell. Halifax has just one game left. They're idle this weekend, then they host Colorado on April 20th. So if they clinch this weekend somehow, I'm sure there's a scenario where they can. It would be weird. You know, they would need other results to kind of back them into a spot, but I like Buffalo to be the team of those two who's definitely more likely to make it. Both are pretty likely to make it. It would be shocking if neither one of those teams, to me, made the playoffs. But I like Buffalo's spot here to host Calgary. And then you go on the road for Vegas, but you should be feeling pretty good when you go play Vegas. Panther City, New York, both sitting on eight wins right now. Comparable schedules for them these last two games. PCLC has Albany this weekend and then a trip to Calgary. New York visits the red-hot Vancouver Warriors this weekend, and then they go... they host. That's right, I will be in the building. They host Albany in their season finale, and what will likely be, in all likelihood, it would be shocking if not, in all likelihood, will be their final game out there on Long Island at Nassau Coliseum. I think of those two, Panther City has the preferable schedule. They get to play a cold Albany team at home and put the pressure on New York with a win if they can manage to win that game. If New York has to go on the road to Vancouver and loses, again, Vancouver's red hot right now, they'll be in win-now mode when they get home in that regular season finale against Albany. Both these squads still have a decent shot. They can both still get in, I think. Yeah, they can both still get in. But it feels to me like they are racing each other at this point. If you think both the Bandits and the Birds are probably in, it leaves two spots for these two teams and then the three teams with seven wins, who are Calgary, Saskatchewan, and again, be still my heart, the Vancouver Warriors have seven wins out of nowhere, folks. Those three teams, Calgary, Saskatchewan, Vancouver, I think they're basically playing playoff games right now. I think a loss at this point sinks them. Vancouver has won four straight, folks. Five of six. Two of those wins are Vegas. Okay, granted. But two of them are also Buffalo and Halifax. The Warriors are as hot as anyone. They made a goalie change, and it's sparked that team. The young stars are it might have taken a little while or longer than you would like, but it feels like they've learned how to win games, and there's something to that. So they're as hot as anyone. The rough thing for them is their remaining schedule is not easy. It's really not easy. They are home for New York, and then they are at San Diego to close the season. It's tough. Tough last two games. The Rush have it harder than that. They have two home games. Cool. That's great. The thing is, their two home games are against the two best teams in the league. Seals this weekend, Toronto next weekend. Going 1-1, I don't know if... 0-2 definitely kills them. 1-1 probably does. So they have to string together wins against the best two teams in the league, I think. Tall order for the Rush. Tall order, man. They've been good, though, lately. Robert Church in an 8-point game over the weekend. Calgary ends the season with the Bandits and Panther City. They're at Buffalo, as we said, where, again, crowd will be hostile. They'll be desperate to lock up, mathematically, that playoff spot. That's a tough road game for Calgary. Their finale's at home. But, you know, again, the results every week now is going to be somebody's season's probably ending. So March to May has been nuts. The player awards, I think, are also going to be nuts. Jeff Teat, Josh Byrne, Dane Smith, I think, are looking like the three players battling for the points crown. They're all kind of within, I think they're within like 5 or 6 points of each other at the top of the standings. Byrne is currently leading the league. I think he has 119 points. And Teat and Dane are not far behind him. They're both in like the 100 and teens. Dane, I think, has the assist crown locked up. He's at 85 assists on the season. The question is, does he reach 100? I think it would be pretty, you know, he'd have to do 15 in two games. But, I mean, this is Dane Smith we're talking about. So Dane's at 85. The next highest assist totals in the league are Byrne and Mitch Jones, who have 71. So Dane's going to lead the league in assists. Teat has 51 goals. He's the only player in the league over 50 right now. Only one. Josh Byrne is there in second. I think he is the high 40s, 47, 48, something like that. If you look at the goalies, among the goalies with over 100 minutes, so the guys who are really playing, only Nick Rose is over 80% in save percentage right now. A lot of these numbers I'm pulling, by the way, are coming from NLLstats.com. Which is just crazy valuable, and you should bookmark and have fun with all the time. Anyway, Rosie and Chris Origliere are the only two in the league with an under 10 goals against. Zach Higgins and Christian DelBianco and CDB have had some bonkers goalie stats. Higgins has 669 saves. I believe CDB has 667. The next highest total in the league is Rosie, a full 40 saves behind DelBianco. So Higgins and CDB are just rubber-stopping machines. They see a ton of shots. He's got like a full game's worth of saves ahead of the next guy. It's crazy. So the goalie battle has been good too. Again, 2 weeks left. The NLL Weekend Primer will be back this week. I'm sorry, there was so little content last week because I was just swamped. But make some time for this playoff race. It's been really good. And this is that time of year where, you know, every week somebody's season's getting ended for a little while. And those are the best kind of games to watch. The loser leaves town games. Turning eyes to the college game here a little bit. There are a bunch of results kind of midweek games that have been going on. There wasn't a ton midweek last week, but the one we want to talk about, the one I really will spend a few minutes on is Cornell and Cuse in overtime. 18-17, Cornell wins, game of the year candidate, absolutely electric. We can get it out of the way off the top here. Coach March getting ejected, sucked to see that, really unfortunate to see that. Especially early in the game, and then it just becomes this thing that's this cloud over the game the rest of the way. As kind of has been hashed out, there was an offside call that was pretty clearly missed. It looked like March and the referee got into it over that call, and ultimately March got run for it. I'm deliberately going through this super quickly. You don't need to live out these details again. It has been very much discussed, dissected. We even got a little Twitter thread that a bunch of people sent my way or tagged me in that was, I will say, maybe a little conspiracy theory-ish about the whole thing. One thing in that thread, which in checking is legit, is if a person is an employee of a university, part-time, full-time, in any capacity, whatever, that person really should not be reffing games involving the university that employs them. Or uses their services for something other than that. And it looks like, you know, one of these refs maybe was also somebody who, you know, is a part-time employee in the athletics department at Cornell or something, running the clock at basketball games. It's not like the guy's like a tenured professor or like, you know, a major Cornell employee person. But if he's an employee in any capacity, he should not be reffing the games. Just shouldn't be. The ejection did not decide the game. That call did not decide the game. There was a whole lot of lacrosse and a whole lot of goals that got played after that. I am not suggesting there was any kind of malfeasance or anything like that. It's just a situation that you just don't want to have happen. With the sports landscape the way it is now, with the billions of dollar octopus that is sports gambling reaching its tentacles into absolutely anything and everything that has to do with sports, even the appearance of things not being totally on the up and up is enough to set people off and go crazy. And you just need to be careful with that stuff. That's all I'll say. With that out of the way, the game itself, awesome. Three goals in the final, whatever, 20 seconds of regulation, a super compelling case to keep the face-off in the game because it ruled. These goals coming right off the face-off, off these incredible plays. You know, just to send the game to OT, where Cornell takes the lead with what I have 6 or 7 seconds left. Cuse wins a face-off and scores with a second left. We end up in overtime. To say nothing of the fact that those three goals in the last few seconds of the game were the 32nd, 33rd, and 34th goals of the night. My God, what a bunch of scoring there was in that game. Billy Dwan scoring a between-the-legs goal. We had penalties of the hard and soft variety. We had some really good chirping and talking back and forth between a nice little upstate New York, you know, rivalry kind of battle thing happening there. The vibes in this game were incredible. Felt like it could have been a playoff game. It's just one of those games where I didn't want it to end. The big stars had their fingerprints all over it, which is what you want in games like this. Spallina, 7 points. CJ Kirst, 5 goals, including the game winner. Michael Long, 9 points. We talked about Dwan with his big goal and his, you know, I just gave you the Kirst line, but Dwan really did play well. Wyatt Nust comes off the bench and casually drops 75% and 9 saves. In the second half in OT, and he's the one who gets mobbed on the game winner. Not cursed. They all went to Nust. And instant classic game. Shuffles the rankings. In-state bet. Like, you could not find a box to check that this game did not check for reasons you love to watch lacrosse. Everything about it was awesome. I'd watch it again in a second. ESPN Classic. If that channel's still around, fire this game up tonight and I'll watch it. In terms of individual awards and stuff, we can touch on midseason All-Americans did come out. I gave you my ballot last week on the podcast, and or 2 weeks ago, I should say, and it probably came out, you know, whatever, a few hours ahead of when the actual teams came out. But, you know, there really wasn't a ton from Team What About, which I was a little, I don't know if the right words are surprised or disappointed by. Because, you know, I like to have that stuff happen. The midseason All-Americans is a good time to get fired up. Again, still, the whole point of those, to me, is to bring attention to the guys who are having All-American level seasons, but might be doing it in places that you don't see on ACC Network or BTN, right? Guys at schools who are killing it and playing legit schedules, but because it's not, you know, the schools that we typically associate with our All-Americans, the teams we run to for the top tier, that you might not see them as much. Those guys have been playing well enough or better than some stars, and or what we would call stars, and deserve some acknowledgement and some attention and maybe the start of a campaign to be an All-American at the end of the year. And that's what I consider the midseason one to be for. So, fun exercise to shout those guys out. They're having All-American seasons. I try to get a good amount of those guys on my ballot. Again, you can go back and listen. You can hear how I voted for again. I'll tell you the one thing about the actual midseason award thing that really surprised me. There was one unanimous first-teamer. Just one. And it wasn't anyone in the Tewaritan crowd. Not Schellenberger, not Kirst, not O'Neill, not Kavanaugh, not Zapatello. It was Will Colletti, the Army faceoff specialist, the only unanimous first teamer. I think there's a lot of arguments for a lot of faceoff specialists. I think there's a lot of arguments for guys in a lot of positions. I was surprised. If you were going to tell me there was going to be one unanimous guy, the faceoff spot is not the place I would pick it. And I voted for Colletti, obviously, but I was just a little stunned that there was only the one, like that there were voters out there who have O'Neill on the second team. Sure, I guess I get it. Schellenberger on the second team felt really hard to do to me. I had Matt Brandau first team. He feels like a guy who would be harder to put below first team, but with the attack position, you always get that. But, you know, the faceoff spot, you know, you figure you're going to have, obviously, Colletti, I knew, was going to be a teamer, but you'd have, like, you know, you'd have your Weirman, Naso, Machado Rodriguez, Yale. A lot of guys who were having awesome seasons. So I was surprised to see that be the only unanimous first teamer. The Tewaritan names now are starting to get thrown around more. The Tewaritan race stuff heating up. I did my fun little player A, player B game with Brennan O'Neill, Connor Schellenberger, CJ Kirst, Pat Kavanaugh, and Joey Spallina, posting their numbers against ranked opponents only, anonymously, without their names, to let people try and guess who is who. And I did this for a few reasons. First, to illustrate that I'm not sold, Brennan is the front runner. Not sold on that at all right now. He had, by a pretty decent margin, basically the lowest numbers from that group of five guys against ranked opponents in that metric. I think that matters. And I think all those haters out there who say Joey just piles up the big points against cupcakes would agree with me, but that's a different conversation, I guess. Well, I guess it's not, because those haters were another reason I did the exercise. Spallina's numbers are as good or better than basically anyone else in that group against ranked opponents. Again, we're only talking about ranked opponents, not the cupcakes. And I'm sure you're going to launch into some weird, like, oh, they're ranked, but they weren't ranked high enough to be... Whatever, man. There's always some caveat, but that is what it is. Third, I consider this Tewaritan race to be pretty open. I did not include Matt Brandau in that little Twitter exercise, but for my money right now, I think he has to be at least a finalist. I think he's playing well enough to say he could win it. I think he could win it. His numbers are as good as they've ever been in a season. And you can make the case that he's Yale's best offensive player. And he's doing this without Yale's second, third, and fourth best offensive players in the lineup. Those guys haven't played this year. Leo Johnson, Chris Lyons, Brad Sharp, they have not played this year. His production has not missed a beat. I think Brandow and I think TJ Malone, I think Inside Lacrosse also pointed out, TJ Malone deserves to be there in the mix too. But I mean, look, forget the winners. It's just a battle to be a finalist right now. I'd love to see Pacino get in there as a finalist even, but we all know this is an attackman award now, so I hope for the best there. I'm pulling for you, Jake, but yeah, you know, that is what it is. There's no better time to build that award.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Award resume, then during conference play. We've had some good conference battles each week now. We are into the thick of conference play. We have a new media poll that came out today. So let's do that. Let's do that little game. Let's go through the media poll here. As always, this is me reading off in order the teams I voted for. And after I give you where I have them, I will give you where they finished in the actual poll. And I'll give you their RPI now as well for just about everybody. Number one, Notre Dame. I know we didn't pod last week, but this is the second week in a row for me having Notre Dame at number one. I don't know what the case is really for anybody else right now. I have Notre Dame as a fairly straightforward and easy pick at number one. UVA did get two first place votes. Notre Dame got all the others. Not that it matters. Notre Dame also has the top RPI. Again, RPI and the media poll have nothing to do with each other, but it's just it's noteworthy at this time of year to talk about where teams are in the RPI. Right now you could put the Irish on the field against anyone and I will take the Irish. I think Pat Kavanaugh took it to Kenny Brower in a way I have not seen and did not see coming at all. I think the broadcast did a really good job during that Notre Dame Duke game of highlighting the way Eric Dobson's role in Notre Dame's offense has changed and how he's still critical, even though you look at his numbers now, and obviously they're not what they've been, but how he's kind of become the hockey assist kind of guy, even through the midfield. I think he's been great. I can't find a spot where they're not good. Their SSDM unit has been very, very good. They're so good on defense. You know, they're backstopped by Liam Eneman. If you try and really nitpick, the same thing you do with everybody who's awesome. You say, well, I guess they could use a couple more guys. I guess they could be deeper. Who couldn't, you know? But the defense to me has been outstanding. As good as the Kavanaughs are, the defense for Notre Dame really has been good. That half of the field will get a really good test this week because they play Cornell this weekend. At number two, I have UVA. Felt like an easy number two here. This matches where they are in the poll. UVA is at four in the RPI. They have seven straight wins now since they lost to Hopkins. They have wins over Maryland and Harvard in that span, which are probably their two best wins. Between now and the end of the month, they got Duke, Cuse, Notre Dame in that order. That's a good schedule. I mean, like, and the only one of those, I think Notre Dame is the only one of those at home. So they will be primed for May. UVA will be. You know, you'll have a feeling that they'll be, if they can go 3-0 in those games, 2-1 in those games would be great. But 3-0 in those games, you'll be looking at a team that people will say they're going to win it all. At number three, I have Hopkins. This is also where they landed in the poll. Hop is at number two in the RPI. The win over Penn State this week is a tough one, a gritty one. Early on, it looked to me like Hopkins was on their way to basically getting carved up all afternoon by TJ Malone, but I think their defense settled in. Quentin Kilrain is really a special player. He really is. He gets brutal matchups every week. He's guarding Voss Scott. He's guarding Mikey Bame. And he's a freshman. That's not easy, man, to get that kind of assignment every week. But I think his game, once the Hopkins defense settled in, I thought he was huge. I thought he played a really, really good game. Hop gets the OT win there. They extend their winning streak to three. They have two games remaining. They are at Ohio State next, and then they host the Terps to close the season. At four, I have Duke, still matching the poll, being boring. I have Duke here. Duke is three in the RPI. Lax Reference has them as a tournament lock at this point, and I think that's pretty fair. I know everyone's going to be like, how are they the only lock? Play out all the scenarios you want and find one where Duke doesn't make the tournament. Even without like the numbers and the metrics and everything, just do like, all right, they lose out. They're still easily in the tournament. They have remaining games against UVA and UNC. Even a stunner loss to UNC does not keep them out. So the talk's going to get louder every week now, though. It was starting to get loud on the broadcast, too. Brennan had 2 goals on 12 shots and no assists against Notre Dame. People want the big performance in the big game from him, and they're getting impatient for it. So when is he going to have it? When's he going to quiet the masses? At this point, it's basically all big games, right? UVA, UNC left. You got the ACC tournament. You're in the postseason. So it's all big games now. Time for Duke to make sure that man gets his points every week. Number five, I have Maryland. Still matching the poll so far. Not bad through five spots. Maybe not good. I don't know. Is it bad to match the poll? Is it good to match the poll? I don't know. Anyway, Terps at five after they win against Ohio State. The Buckeyes' defense is no joke. And I say that because I know I have maligned the Terps' offense at times this year. But I think they played pretty well in this one against a very good unit. I know the Buckeyes are without Van Buren, but it's still a really good defense. Luke Wierman was excellent. That's always going to be, I think, the key for Maryland is does Luke Wierman not just win the matchup, but win it handily. And he had a significant edge on Tommy Burke in the Ohio State faceoff unit. Spanos did a lot of the damage. Terps are at 6 in the RPI. They have remaining games against Rutgers and Hop. That could easily be 2 losses. Rutgers just beat Michigan. That could easily be 2 losses. Could easily be 2 wins. But, you know, right now they've got back-to-back wins against Penn State, Ohio State. Coach Tillman's going to have them going in the right direction at the right time. And this is now the key time. Number 6, I have Cornell. Okay, I finally some deviation from the actual poll. I jumped Cornell up to 6 on the back of that Q's win. The final poll had them moved up to 8th, so not quite as far as I did. I bet if I asked you who Cornell's leading scorer was this year, you'd say CJ Kirst. You'd be wrong. Michael Long having a masterful season. He has now reached 50 points. We already talked about, you know, the goalie change that Cornell made and how critical that was. It'll be interesting to see what Cornell does with the goalie spot in some of those bigger games. They beat Brown too, but you know, not a lot to write home about there. Their biggest game that they have left is their next one, Notre Dame. Cornell is 10 in the RPI. Irish are the top dog, both in the poll and the RPI. There's nobody who can do more for you right now than beating Notre Dame. So I have Cornell here at 6. Final poll has them 8. At number 7, I have the Q's. I put them 1 spot behind the team that just beat them. So they go to 7. This match is where they are in the final poll for the week. They also came in at 7. They didn't play a weekend game. They just had that that Cornell loss most recently. We really already talked about the game, so no need to do that again here. Q's is also 7 in the RPI. So just 7s across the board in my ballot and the final poll and the RPI. They play Carolina next. Interesting thing to watch there is, will Coach March be on the sideline for that? I have to make sure. I don't want to speak out of turn, but I believe the answer to that is no. I believe if you get ejected, you have to miss the next game. I don't know if there's an appeal thing going on there, but I will try to find that out before the weekend. Number 8, I have Georgetown. They came in at 6 in the final poll, so I basically flip-flopped them and Cornell with the poll. The Hoyas have the win over the Irish. It's the best win probably for anyone in America right now. They are currently 11th in the RPI, though. They have a 21st ranked strength of schedule. Georgetown has won 8 in a row after starting 0-2, but their best win since Notre Dame is probably Richmond, which is okay. Hoya's toughest remaining game is their next one. They take a trip to Denver. Big East regular season supremacy is probably on the line in that one. So that's going to be one of the more interesting game to watch this weekend. Number 9, I have Penn State. I guess I continue to just overrate teams based on wins and losses, but they came in the final poll at 11. So people, I guess, dinged them harder for losing to Hopkins than I did. It's their second loss in a row. I'm not surprised to see them drop, you know, drop kind of sharply, maybe more than I dropped them. They were in control of that Hop game, but they couldn't ever put their foot on the Jays' throat. I like Malone so much for the pro game, more and more every time I watch him. I really think he's a pro star. I think he needs to be a lock of a first-round pick. He's going to make somebody so happy when he's on their PLL team. Penn State is ninth in the RPI now. They have Michigan and Rutgers left, who are both outside the top 15. So you want to see them kind of take care of business there and keep that at-large resume sharp if it comes to that. 10, I have Yale. Yale's at 9 in the final poll. They beat Penn this week in a game that was, by Bulldog standards, very low scoring. It's a 12-9 game. Yale's offense, still very sharp. Brandow, to me, again, has to be a Tewarton finalist, I think. Where I have come to really like Yale, though, is facing off. Rodriguez has been outstanding, one of the best in the country. Players like Stuzan and Hackler are perfect for wing play, particularly with him, with Rodriguez as the guy facing off and the way he plays. It is a bear of a unit that is all three of those guys, the way they play together, it just all fits so well. Yale still needs consistent performances on defense. They did get one against Penn, but they need to play at a high level all the time. I might even be wrong about it. It might just be my personal thing. I have never loved the plan of just win shootouts. So you want to see them really, you know, put together consistently good games on defense. Yale is currently 8 in the RPI. Next up, a little Tuesday night game, a game tonight. Tuesday for the Hunter, perhaps. They play BU in Boston this evening. Send me the lines, please. I can't see them. Send me the Yale line. Number 11, I have Denver. Denver is 10 in the actual poll. I have them at 11. Denver, Yale, PSU, Penn State, I should say, just made up this kind of trio that fits in the 9 to 11 spots. And I think whatever way you want to try and sort that out is, I guess, dealer's choice a little bit. To me, Penn State beat Yale, Yale beat Denver. I started right there with it and kind of just, that's how I sat with these three teams. But Denver smacked around St. John's this week. Not much to write about there. Coach Tierney was on the broadcast for that game, though. And again, I know everyone hates paying for streaming services. I will continue to tell you Denver's is worth it. But he talked a little bit about taking the PLL job. I did find it interesting that he said PLL came to him 2 years ago about a coaching job. Said the league wanted to make a big announcement out of it, all that type of stuff. But he was focused on his last year at Denver, and he turned him down. Just an interesting an interesting comment from Coach Tierney, given my read on the situation of his hiring being a splash hire. We don't have to spend more time on that. Denver hosts Georgetown this week, as we already said. Pioneers are 5th in the RPI with a top 5 win. Their resume is looking very, very good for the tournament. Army, I have at 12. This match is where they came in the final poll. They lost to Colgate this week. And I feel like we did this last year with Army too, and it feels insane because Army spent two weeks, I think, as the number one team in the land. But I think it's Patriot League title or bust. They have an RPI of 18. 18. Probably not getting in with that at large. Remaining regular season games, Navy, Bucknell, Loyola. Not really going to do much for you, those. It's crazy to think that a team that's as good as Army and that spent time at number one in the country is league title or bust. But that's how it looks to me right now. And that's why the media poll doesn't really mean anything when it comes time for Selection Sunday, I guess. At 13, I have Princeton. This matches the final poll. They took care of business against Lehigh. Colin Mulshine deserves a little shout. He held Scott Cole to, I think, just 2 points in that game. Not easy. Scott Cole is a very good player. Tigers have won 3 straight with a victory over Harvard in there. They visit Bruno this weekend. Brown might be wounded animal, kind of dangerous. Who knows what Bruno puts out there? That'll be a... I don't know. I keep waiting for Bruno to stun somebody, and just nobody's getting stunned. So, I don't know. Princeton's currently 12 in the RPI. They probably still have a little bit of work to do, but they have Penn and Yale remaining on the schedule. At 14, I have BU. Final poll has them at 15. They're down at 21 in the RPI. Like Army, I think it's Patriot League title or bust for the Terriers. They didn't play this week. Their last game was that kind of stomping of Holy Cross. Before that, they had that battle with Duke. That was a winnable game that they let get away. But again, we talked about it. They can make some noise today. It's Tuesday, and they are the hunter. They host Yale tonight. So going to tune in for that BU Yale game. At 15, I have Penn. Final poll has them at 14, so I flipped them and BU. The Quakers lost to Yale this week. I went with my family to watch this one. It was a beautiful day. Nice day to go up to New Haven, so we checked it out for a little while. I wanted to see the Brendan Lavelle-Matt Brandau battle, honestly. Both have had just such good seasons. And I think Brandau got the better of the matchup, and I think that says a lot about his ability. He was getting to where he wanted to get on the field, when he wanted to get there. And against Lavelle, that's not something everybody does. Lavelle won a matchup with Brendan O'Neill this year, but Brandau, I think, took him for 5 points. So Penn's got two games left, Harvard and Princeton. Their RPI is 14. Princeton, I think, is ahead of them. Harvard's one spot behind them. Ivy is just turning into its usual insane race to the finish. Who knows how many teams the Ivy's going to get in? Is everybody going to hate the committee because of the Ivy League again? That's the fun question. At 16, I have Harvard. Again, I matched the final poll here. It's not usually quite this similar. I'm not usually this boring, I swear. But spoiler alert, teaser ahead. The good stuff is coming. 17 to 20 is the good stuff. Harvard has an RPI of 15 right now. They took care of business against Dartmouth over the weekend. Although the Big Green did not make it easy. They got out to a lead. Harvard did not get to just cruise in that one. But Harvard snaps a three-game skid. They have remaining games with Penn, Cornell, and Brown. Only Brown has a worse RPI there, so Harvard can improve their resume over the next few weeks for sure. At 17, Rutgers. Yes, I ranked Rutgers. They came in receiving votes in the final poll, so I vastly overrate Rutgers, I guess. But they beat a team that was ranked 15 a week ago. They needed the win. They really don't have much of a resume right now. Their RPI is 23. They really need the Big Ten. But this is how you start down that road, I think. Rutgers still has the players to be dangerous. Ross Scott is awesome. Stoller looks better all the time. Knobloch is awesome. Stoller was really outstanding against Michigan, and that's a Michigan offense that can score goals. So I thought, you know, the Rutgers, the strength of a win against Michigan, a team that had just beat Maryland, I think, you know, in my mind, put Rutgers up into the poll. So I have Rutgers at 17. Maybe too high. Whatever. It's my vote. Rutgers has Maryland next week in College Park. We'll see how smart or dumb I am. 18. I still ranked Michigan. The final poll dropped them. They were receiving votes in the final poll. I can see the case for why. I wouldn't argue with you if you tell me I'm an idiot for ranking Michigan. They've lost two in a row. But really, if we think Maryland is top five good, then maybe Michigan's win against Maryland is good enough to keep them in the poll. It's by far their best win. Michigan, like Rutgers, probably needs to win the conference. Remaining games, both at home, Penn State, and then the game, Ohio State, to close the regular season. 19, I have St. Joe's. They stay in this week for me. Their winning streak is up to 7 games. They put up a pretty convincing scoreline. 12-7 against UMass is good. I think they're also 19 in the final poll. The A-10 is a one-bid league. That's obvious. St. Joe's does have an RPI of 13, but it's a one-bid league. The non-con slate for them is probably helping that RPI number a little bit. If they can keep this high level of play up, though, they should be comfortable for the next few weeks, and then they close the regular season with Richmond. That'll be a good one. That will be a good one. At 20, I have Colgate. Colgate has to be in the poll after beating Army, for sure. I put them at 20. They could absolutely be higher than 20. They did actually come in higher than that, as you can imagine, in the final poll. They're at 17. Colgate's RPI is 20. We've covered the Patriot League. It's a one-bid league, yada, yada, yada. But, man, is that going to be one hell of a tournament, because there's at least right now 3-4 teams who have the personnel and the level of play and the coaching and everything it takes to win the Patriot League tournament. But only one team's doing it. So Colgate's next game is at home against Lehigh this weekend. Teams that were either in the poll or received votes that I also kind of considered, Richmond. Richmond beat up Hobart this week, basically in every phase of the game. They were ranked in the poll at 19. I did not rank Richmond. They're now 7-4. Okay? 7-4. It's a good record. The seven are Robert Morris, St. John's, Binghamton, UMBC, Bucknell, St. Bonaventure, and Hobart. None of those are really any good. The losses, Maryland, UVA, Georgetown, Duke. The lowest ranked of those right now is Georgetown at 6. They play a great schedule. They challenge themselves with the very best of the best. Those four games are incredibly difficult. They deserve kudos for scheduling such good teams. I know the measurables are good. I know the talent is good. But at some point, to me, the results of the games have to matter. And losing close to a good team is still losing. And beating bad teams is okay. Doesn't impress me a ton. So I didn't rank Richmond. I say the same thing about them every week. I'm sure we're all tired of it. Towson. Towson's probably my 21st team this week. I felt wrong to not rank them, but they did come in at 18th or in the poll, so everybody else got it right and bailed me out. But four straight wins this week against Hofstra probably doesn't move the needle a ton, but they should be pretty heavy favorites the next 2 weeks before they close the regular season with Delaware. They're a really good team. They're a really good team. Their midfield's great. Their entire offense is awesome. I think they can face off well and give teams problems by playing some make-it-take-it. I think they can win the CAA, for sure. Towson is very, very good. Navy got votes. I considered Navy. They squeaked one out against Lafayette to win their third straight. Not necessarily the prettiest. Their Colgate win obviously gets better because Colgate just beat Army. Navy, of course, has the opportunity to do that themselves this week. Army, Navy, at West Point this weekend. I'll be there. Can imagine thousands of other people will be there too, but oof, those games are as fun as it gets. So Army, Navy at West Point this weekend. I consider Navy for the poll for sure. I think they're very good. Also receiving votes that I also thought about voting for, Ohio State. The Buckeyes lost to the Terps by a goal. Their defense, again, I said it, but it's so good. Even without Bobby Van Buren for most of the year, really. Lose to the Terps by 1. Lose to Penn State by 3. Lose to Notre Dame by 3. They're right there with these teams. But at 6-6, and I'm the guy who keeps telling you the results have to matter, I couldn't rank them. I just couldn't do it. Also received votes, but I didn't really consider voting for. Bryant was in receiving votes. They beat Albany this week. They're now 7-3. The losses aren't horrendous or anything. I don't think they just, you know, they have the BU win, but they don't have a ton in the way of quality wins outside of that. I probably have them around 25, 24, 25, 26. I can't get them into 20. I can't put them ahead of any of the other teams we already talked about. So Bryant got votes. I did not consider Bryant. And Delaware got votes. I didn't really think about Delaware. I think I said it kind of when they dropped out after I believe they lost to Cuse, maybe to Michigan, but that they'd have a hard time getting back in. They're winning, but their wins are Monmouth, Hofstra, Hampton, Fairfield. Those aren't wins that get you back in without some insanity happening ahead of you. Not yet. So Stony Brook this week, they'll probably be a favorite. It probably won't do much for them to win that game, but they keep stringing the wins together. They got Towson coming up. Then they can get back in the poll. Did not really get considered for votes, but I considered Sacred Heart. Would I really rank Sacred Heart? Probably not. But look, they deserve a shout. They have won 6 in a row. They're now sitting at 8-4. They had a brutal start, okay? They started 0-3, but they're 8-1 over their last 9 games. They have yet to lose in MAC play. They beat Siena. They beat LIU by significant margins. They beat them down. They're one of the hottest teams in the country right now. If you're a gambler and you're not picking Sacred Heart every week, you're losing easy money. They have a midweek showdown with Quinnipiac. They're doing all this, by the way, without Salmicio, who's hurt. But like, if you're a Connecticut fan, Sacred Heart-Quinnipiac is a game you should try and get to. That'll be good. That'll be good for sure. Sacred Heart deserves a little bit of pop. They are on fire in the MAC. But that right there, that's the top 20. I do apologize for vanishing a week ago. Norovirus ripped through my house into pink guy through the house. The dog is sick. My real job is nuts. Earthquakes, eclipses. It's the end days, folks, but I'm still trying to podcast anyway. I do thank you for listening. I am so excited to be part of Believe. I'm excited to be their first lacrosse podcast. It's really a point of pride for me. And I start by thanking anybody who listens or has told me that they enjoy the podcast and that I should keep recording it, because that's why I keep recording it. So thank you again for coming back to talk about lacrosse with me, to go through the top 20, and for sticking around. And we'll see you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.